is Jared the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game, back in our regular 2 o'clock slot. GM, how are you today?
Outstanding. What's going on?
I'm in a bad mood.
Oh yeah.
Darren McFarland got me in a bad mood before the start of the show. Darren wants to know how much show we're going to dedicate to Bryce Drew and the job he's doing at Vandy. And I had to explain to him that is a tomorrow topic, because tomorrow we will have our second ever Vanderbilt caucus. We had it after SEC Media Days 2 years ago last year. It was wildly successful. Tomorrow, before Vandy plays the number one ranked Vols, we will have our second ever Vanderbilt caucus, in which we have many issues to discuss. But other than that 1 hour of caucusing that we will have about Vanderbilt, I just can't dedicate enough time to Vandy. They just don't matter in this town. And I'm not trying to take a shot at him by saying that, but, I mean, look, they're playing the number one ranked Tennessee Vols team. And I didn't even want to start the show on this, but I will say this. That school has never mattered less in this city than they mattered today. We cannot even spend a lot of time talking about that game today, which 10 years ago would have been the whole show, would have been talking about the Vols and Vandy getting ready to play the number one Vols. And I just can't do it. They just, Vandy just does not matter. They just don't. Well, that'll be a tomorrow thing. A today thing. We were off the air yesterday at 1 o'clock. Did you notice what happened at 1 o'clock yesterday?
Yes.
What was that?
Titans named Arthur Smith offensive coordinator.
Okay, the defensive Titans named Arthur Smith the offensive coordinator. And now, do I think it was an accident that they waited until Jared and the GM went off the air yesterday to do that? I do not, but but I can't even say that with a straight face. But what do we think? Because a lot of people either love the move or hate the move, and I don't know if I feel that way at all. I mean, I don't know if I love the move or hate the move. I mean, Arthur Smith doesn't seem like an overly exciting choice. You know, it wasn't like Arthur Smith comes from a team that was lighting up the scoreboard left and right. He's never called a play before. And honestly, he's never really been on a team that's had a good offense before. So there's a part of me that's like, I mean, why are we just promoting Joe Schlo from, you know, tight ends coach to be the Titans offensive coordinator? And then there's another part of me that says, you know, like, they had the young gun that came in here last year is going to score all them points. And he kind of sucked. And they had the old guy who had all the experience, and he was going to do it, and he kind of sucked. So, like, maybe Arthur Smith has earned his way to offensive coordinator, and maybe he'll do a good job, and maybe the continuity of having him here is a big deal, and maybe it works out. I don't know. I guess that's my take on it. I don't know enough about Arthur Smith or enough about what they want to do to be able to have a solid opinion as to whether or not I like this hire or not.
Well, I think Arthur is kind of, he's definitely flown under the radar. I mean, he's been here for a long time. Munch hired him originally.
Yeah, so he's been here.
He's been here through a lot of staff. So, you know, people obviously like him because they keep rehiring him. I think he is somebody that is very highly respected in the building. I think everybody over there really likes him. I think if you look at the options, and we saw one last year, when we brought in LaFleur last year, he's in exactly the same position as Arthur is now, except he was unfamiliar with everything about the Titans. You know, Arthur has never called a play. LaFleur had never called a play. I mean, if you're bringing in a young offensive or defensive coordinator, chances of them being a play caller someplace else is very low. So that, I think that part of it's uncommon. Does he know the players? Yeah. Does he know the coaches? Yes. Does he know Vrabel and the organization? Yeah. You know, is he a Nashvilleian? Yeah. So all of that part of it, I think, is a positive.
Who cares if he's a Nashvilleian?
Well, I mean, I think it's he doesn't have to move here. He doesn't have to go through any of that kind of stuff. He is settled, you know, so he's ready to go right out of the box. And I think that, you know, you can we'll go back and forth on this 1,000 times. Truth is, the answer's in, you know, the production. And we'll get a look at that during the season. But
apparently not, because Matt LaFleur stunk and everybody had his back and the Green Bay Packers hired him. So I'm not even convinced that the results actually matter as to whether or not you did a good job as coordinator, one way or another. I mean, to me, the excuses next year, and I'm sure that if the offense doesn't play well, they'll be there like they were this year. But there are no excuses to me anymore. Excuses are over. So if the offense comes out and stinks, it's Vrabel's fault. If they take 6 months to learn how to use the star player, it's Vrabel's fault. And that's because that's the only thing that from the outside that I know that I can do. You know, how can I look at Arthur Smith? I mean, all those things you said about him are probably true. I mean, I don't know how much, you know, being respected in the building. Great. I mean, is that going to put you over the top next year when New Orleans or Kansas City comes in here and you're going to have to score 45 points to win? Maybe. I don't know. But to me, I guess with the Titans offensive coordinator hire, I guess I'm just kind of like, whatever. You know, like, we don't know about these guys.
The proof is going to be in the pudding. You know, however the offense plays. I mean, there you are. That's kind of the bottom line. And that would be true if they hired Arthur Smith, if they hired, you know, Johnny Smith from someplace else who came in who had never called a play, it'd be exactly the same thing. You know, I think there is an advantage having knowledge of the organization and everything that's going on, and the organization having knowledge of him. I think that is definitely an advantage. You know, does that win you two more games next year? Yeah, I doubt it. But does it help you get off to a good start? Seems like it should. You know, I always felt like if somebody within the organization rehires you, that's got to be a positive because they know you. You know, it's not like they're listening to some guy say, hey, you know, you need to hire this guy. He's really bright and he's really good and he loves ball and he, you know, on and on and on. You don't need to listen to anybody. I mean, you've worked with him. You know him. You know, each guy could have individually decided, yeah, that's what I want to do. Let's bring Arthur in and let him go. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I mean, I think it's a positive over bringing somebody in from the outside.
I knew you'd love this hire.
Where does that get you? Who knows? You know, we'll have to see where it goes from here. I think the offense itself is kind of, I'm going to guess now, but his background leads me to believe that he's going to be somebody that a year ago or 2 years ago we were trying to get away from. That is somebody that's maybe not as run heavy, and yet I think we found out that, you know what, that's a way we can win.
Let the big dog eat.
I think they will. I think they'll head back that way again a little bit and get, you know, a little bit more play action and maybe not as be as big, big way down the field.
So I have no idea. My entire life, I have only kind of liked one Titans offensive coordinator, Les Steckel being the asterisk that I was too young to really know what a coordinator did at that point. But I've only really liked one Titans coordinator. It was Heimerdinger, and I really didn't even like him that much. So may he rest in peace. But I've hated all the other ones. To me, that's the target for Arthur Smith. Be better than all those guys. Make me not hate you as coordinator of the Titans. I hated LaFleur. Hated him. Hated Rubisky. Hated Chris Palmer. Hated, you know, Wisenhunt when he was calling the play. All of them. Norm Chow. Worst Titans offensive coach maybe ever. And that is the whole key to this, is that when they hired Norm Chow, it was like, hey, USC's putting up 95 points a game. Here comes Norm Chow, baby. And he was horrible. So I feel like it can kind of be either way. We'll see. I don't know. I do not have a feeling of like or dislike on this hire one way or another, although I knew you would find a way to like this hire because, you know, that's just...
Well, plus I knew you wouldn't. So, and
I don't not.
I'm
wait
going
a minute.
The opposite.
I don't not like the hire.
You just went through a whole list of every guy they've hired. You disliked every one of them.
And that's his job. What's is to make me this, like him.
That's his job to make you like.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. If you're around a person and they hate everybody around them, is that the people that are around them, or is that person's problem?
I've liked defensive coordinators.
You didn't answer my question. if you hate everybody around you.
No, but I don't hate everybody because I like the defensive coordinators.
Well, you just went through every offensive coordinator. You hate every one of them.
Except for Heimerdinger.
So is that a problem with the offensive coordinators? Or is that a problem with...
I think if you look at the history of the Titans, you would realize it's them, not me.
I would.
So that's on the table. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. And don't think that you don't get any blame for some of those hires, because Norm Chow, oh, God, was he bad. Now, the other thing, the Predators, last night or yesterday afternoon when we were off the air, hopefully everybody was listening to 102.5, the flagship home of the Predators, as the Predators beat Colorado yesterday. And just like with this Titans offensive coordinator hire, I don't know how I feel about it. They were terrible in the first period, and Pekka kept them in the game. And honestly, they weren't that good in the second period, and Pekka kept them in the game. And then they had a big lead, and they were fine in the third period. And so Pekka plays great, but the team doesn't. And the team started off poorly, and he saved their bacon. Well, what's our big concern? That they're starting off poorly, that they're not playing well in front of them. So do we get excited about a win because it's 4-1, and hey, they won 4-1, great job? Or do we look at it for what it is and say, hey, if Pekka doesn't go out there and essentially throw a no-hitter for the first period and a half, you're probably down 2-0, and now you're having to chase the game, and you probably go out there and lose the game. So bad job, skaters. Good job, goalie. Like, I don't know how to feel about yesterday's game.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, but that Pekka was really, really strong. I mean, he played well, and, you know, if there was if there's somebody that won the game, I mean, it was Pekka. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That being said, I think the slow starts is something that's become characteristic of this team. And Peter addressed it whenever it was, yesterday, the day before, whatever. I mean, I think he understands and realizes that they are getting off to slow starts. And I think he is trying to do something, whatever that may be, to correct it. Now, I don't know exactly what you do to change slow starts. I mean, I don't know if that means you rotate the lines, and I don't know what you would do. Maybe just make them aware of the fact, but I think they've been aware. It's not like this is something that's just cropped up.
I don't think they can change the lines. You want to take Bonino and Watson off that line that they're together where they're the only ones producing?
I don't know.
You want to take Arvidsson and Forsberg off of a line from each other? No.
If it's not working, you have to do something. You can't continue to do the same thing and wait for it to work. I mean,
he's
that's not
the
way it works.
And they still
– So I
Ellis
think there's
– stinks right now.
If
he
rotating
stinks.
Some people or moving them around or whatever the case may be is a solution, then I would look at that. If it's not, then, you know, fine. I mean, we could just keep having slow starts.
Well, I don't think you can change – I mean, like, you can. You can change your second. You can move Fiala down to the fourth line. You can do things like that. I don't know what you can do to your first or third line. I mean, your third line is your second line right now. Bonino – yesterday was Bonino, Yarncroke, and Watson. You can't break those guys up unless you move, you know, Yarncroke and Sissons. But with two centers out, makes that kind of hard to do. And you want Sissons playing up with the best guys, and I get that. So that's kind of tough. The D pairs, he's already flipped them, and he benched Yannick Weber yesterday. So he's trying that. And Ellis, I'm getting real close on Ellis, Ian. I'm getting real close.
Empty net goal doesn't count at the end?
No. I'm getting real close to telling him he needs to pay what he owes.
Him and Turris?
Yes, because he signs this new contract, and now every time I turn on the TV, Ryan Ellis is falling down like Happy Gilmore trying to skate. Like, I'm getting real close to him needing to pay what he owes, too. Now, Turris, when he comes back, he needs to pay what he owes. But again, you know, it was a good win for the Predators, I guess. It was a great win for Pekka. It was an okay win for the Predators. And congratulations to Peter on win number 600. So that's on the table, too. Your phone, 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. We're live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. and Mount Juliet. There is one thing that Floyd kept saying. It was an excuse Floyd kept making, in my opinion, last offseason. Well, with the new offensive coordinator, I have decided I don't want to hear that excuse, and I don't think I should hear that excuse. And we will get to that coming up next here on Jared and the GM. Let me tell you who doesn't make excuses. Authentically American. Why? Because their clothing is great and it's made in the USA quality. If you're a business owner or a decision maker on company apparel, Authentically American is right for you. Everything they have is made in the USA. That's made in the USA quality. Your company's logo will be right there on their polos, their shirts, their hats, their Oxfords, their socks, their vests, whatever. Authentically American has got you covered. Made in the USA. You can find their whole collection online at authenticallyamerican.us. A lot of people ask me. They say, you know, what's up with Authentically American? There is nothing up with it. It is a proud made in America company that is made by veterans that own the company, and 10% of all sales go to veterans and veteran charities. That's why I love telling you all about Authentically American. Again, if you're a business owner, for that business apparel for your company, get it made in the USA, big or small, and I'm talking about company size, big or small, they've got you covered. AuthenticallyAmerican.us. Jared and Floyd at ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Football coaches that come in, they're not going to hire anybody just because somebody else likes them. They are going to hire them or keep them because of the work that they can do for them and how they can help their regime be better. He's been here through a lot of that. I love the hire because, first of all, I respect him, his work ethic, what he does, his knowledge, and I know how much these players respect him in this locker room. He did a fantastic job with that tight end group this week, and I think his ability to be able to continue the offense that we've started, you know, with Matt LaFleur will be really, really big. And plus, I think he and Mike Vrabel will mesh very well as far as philosophy.
Dave McGinnis on the Titans official podcast. So Dave McGinnis loves the hire of Arthur Smith. Floyd Reese loves the hire of Arthur Smith, even though Floyd did say at the start that he'd be surprised if the offensive coordinator was on the staff. So are you surprised at least a little bit?
Yeah.
So you love the hire. Dave McGinnis loves the hire on the Titans official podcast. I don't know. I mean, you know, whatever. I don't know. It was funny because we were getting into it during the break a little bit about this, and you were like, you said that I don't know enough to know whether or not I like the hire. I go, that was my take? I don't know. I have no idea. But there was an excuse that everybody had last year, and maybe it was valid. I don't know. But the excuse was, this offense is going to take time. It's going to take time to get going. It's going to take time for Marcus to get it. It's going to take time for LaFleur to get a feel for everybody else. It's going to take time. Time, Jared. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. They just fired the coaching staff that made the playoffs last year and won a playoff game. They fired that staff, and now you're telling me it's going to take time? Well, since we're all for continuity, and you heard what Coach McGinnis just said right there, I am not listening to that excuse this year. I am not listening to the, it's a new coordinator, it'll just take time, they've got to adjust, they've got, you know what? You've got the OTAs, you've got training camp, you've got preseason games. That's what all of that is for. And when week one comes, and I hope it's week one against the Saints or whomever that's good on the schedule, when week one comes, Floyd, I don't want any excuses about it taking time. It should not take time to learn this offense since they promoted from within.
Well, yeah. I mean, Arthur, probably the offense, you know, the basis for what it is he's going to do are already things that Marcus has been through. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I think it's, you know, it ought to be a much easier transition than anything they've done. You know, I'm going to guess things like terminology and play calling and all sorts of things like that are going to be pretty much the same. So, I mean, I would think that you would move right into that. It's going to be, I mean, as far as a transition for Marcus, I mean, this will be the easiest one he's been through in the last, how many have they been? Four or five. I mean, this one will certainly be the easiest for him.
So no excuses.
I'm not, I mean, that's completely up to you.
Well, no, you told me last year the whole time was, it takes time to learn the offense. It's going to take time. You got to realize it's going to take time. Time. And I didn't like that, but I had to put up with it. And okay, but this year, none of that. No taking time. Promote with within to keep continuity. No excuses this year. And in all fairness, I feel like Marcus doesn't really get any excuses this year because of the situation he's in. I kind of feel like we should look at the coaching the same way.
Well, I think you're putting the hat on Marcus. If you're doing anything by doing that, you're putting the hat right on Marcus.
Well, I mean, I think that Marcus has
no transition time. So in your world, he's got to hit the ground running.
Well, I mean, if Marcus stinks it up next year, then can we really look at the coordinator? The thing about Marcus, and I've always thought this about Marcus and Derrick Henry, and I'm glad that I don't think I have to think this about Derrick Henry anymore. But I've always believed that, now, Marcus, to me, it's all about injury. That's the only thing I worry about. But I always feel like if you think that Marcus is bad and move on from Marcus and he stinks and all that, Marcus is going to go to Jacksonville or Miami and beat your butt. It's going to happen. And that's what I worry about, is hiring these bozo offensive coordinators like Matt LaFleur and then Marcus going to Miami and lighting it up and winning a Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden, how do you feel? And I don't think Arthur Smith's a bozo. I mean, I don't know, but I think he's – I like the fact that I think Arthur Smith is going to try to coach to win football games and not coach to go be a head coach somewhere else, which I can't say about LaFleur. I felt like LaFleur was always worried about being Johnny throw the ball, and he wants to be Sean McVay, and now he's got his wish, so he can go to the Packers and go light it up or whatever he's going to do. But I never got that feeling that the number one priority for LaFleur was to win football games. And I do like the fact that I feel that way about Arthur Smith. Let's go to your phones. And Corey Curtis has called in, so he jumps to the front of the line. 615-737-1025. Corey Curtis has called in from News 2. Okay, Corey, what do you want to say?
Well, I just want to say this. We don't know, just like you said, but whether you're a banker, you're in football, you're in radio, it doesn't matter. Your job as an organization is to recognize talent, recognize hard workers, recognize good team members, and elevate them into positions of leadership. So I like it from the aspect that this is a guy who, no matter who I ask about, I hear nothing but things like, he's really smart, he's worked really hard. And, I mean, listen, Arthur Smith could have been Billy Madison. He didn't have to work a day in his life, but he spent years in the film room in quality control, which is where real football is learned, according to a lot of coaches I've talked to. So I respect the path that he has taken and his ability to earn this position. Now, he's still got to do the job, but I think when you look at the resume and the man, you can like the hire.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not knocking any of that. I think it's all valid stuff. Especially, you know, that goes back to my thing about winning football games. And I think that's a good take, Corey. I think that's a kind of, you know, the one thing that I really hate when people say that I bet you Arthur Smith probably hates is, now we all know Arthur Smith is rich, right? His dad owns FedEx. So Arthur Smith is rich, but I bet you nobody hates that line of, he doesn't have to work a day in his life, and he chooses to grind through 80-hour weeks because he... I bet you nobody hates hearing that more than Arthur Smith. I mean, I don't care about that. I think a lot of people... We talked about this yesterday off the air. A lot of people work to make money because they hate their jobs, and then a lot of people love their jobs. And if you... I look at a football coach, even though it is very hard, as a job that if you're a good coach, you just love to coach. Bill Belichick doesn't have to coach anymore to make any more. Bill Belichick's probably got $100 million saved up. But, you know, Bill Belichick just loves to coach. You know, you probably got to the point when you left the Titans, you probably didn't have to go work anymore. And instead, you're waking up at 3 a.m. in blizzards in Foxborough to go drive to the office to go watch a backup receiver from Saginaw State for 2 hours on film. And that's not because Floyd Reese is trying to make money to put food on the table for the family. That's because Floyd Reese loves doing that. And so I don't care about that fact, but I guess it is worth saying that Arthur Smith got in and paid his dues in the league.
Oh, there, yeah. I mean, he's had to have wanted to do it, because otherwise, I mean, you don't survive, especially in the positions he's been in. I mean, when you're all that quality control stuff now, they run you ragged. And, I mean, they wear you out.
And there is one aspect of that that does make me love this hire. And it's not even Titans related, but it's something we see another organization do. And there is one thing about the Arthur Smith hire that I absolutely love. And we'll get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM, hey, join us tomorrow at Corner Pub downtown from 2 to 6. We have another pair of tickets to give away on the Yeehaw Brewing Company Predators bus trip to see the Preds take on the Blues in St. Louis on Saturday, February 9th. You must be 21 years old or older to enter. Apparently, the bus trip for the St. Louis thing sold out in 6 hours. It sold out in 6 hours. So it sells out in 6 hours, but we had a couple of pairs, so we gave one away yesterday. We're giving another pair away today, tomorrow out at Corner Pub downtown, so be excited about that. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Arthur Smith is ready for this. I mean, I have no doubt because I have worked with him. I've seen him. I've sat in the same room with him, game planning, and then I've watched him grow as a coach. I've got no doubt this is a good move.
Coach Dave McGinnis on the Titans official podcast on Arthur Smith. So you heard Dave McGinnis allude to having worked with Arthur Smith before. Mike Munchak's first year, Dave McGinnis was on the staff,
right,
and that was the first year that Arthur Smith was in quality control. So they have worked together, and this is the one thing that makes me love this hire. Is Arthur Smith, you talk about working your way up, defensive quality control, offensive quality control, assistant tight ends coach, and now offensive coordinator. And I thought to myself, you know who works their guys to death and runs them up the flagpole more than any coach in the NFL?
Who is that?
Well, how many guys in New England when you were there were promoted from within? I mean, every year there's
everybody.
Somebody new.
Yeah, they're all from within.
And it's all like, this guy started in 1997 as an, you know, cleaning out ashtrays and driving people to the airport, and now he's Matt Patricia, you know, or this guy started in 2001. He was an outside linebackers coach at Sam Houston State. Belichick brought him in to be an intern. Then he was a scout. Then he was secondary coach. Now he's defensive coordinator. Now he's going to be head coach of the Dolphins like Brian Flores. I don't even know where Brian Flores got his start, but I'm sure you were there when Brian Flores got his start.
Got his start there.
And were you there then when Brian Flores came in?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I think he may have already been there, but I'm not sure. I can't remember what he was coaching. But he kind of worked his way into being a DB coach.
So then he goes to DB coach, then to linebackers coach. He's not even coordinator right now. He's just calling the plays. And now he's head coach of the Dolphins. I mean, this is the way that Bill Belichick does it. I don't know how Bill O'Brien got his start, but I think it was as a quarterback's coach or a quarterback intern or something like that.
Yep.
And now Bill O'Brien's coach of the Texans. And that is the way Belichick does it. And I think it goes back to how Belichick got his start with you in Detroit, was that, you know, you guys were low men on the totem pole and you work your way up, and then he wants guys to do that, and he works them so hard and all of that, and they can kind of do what Belichick wants them to do. And I think that that is what Vrabel's trying to do here with Arthur Smith.
Well, you don't. I mean, the thing you do by bringing them up through the system like that is they know the system better than anybody else there, because if you go back through it, they have literally coached all of those elements. You know, they've bounced around. He's worked on the defensive side. He's worked on the offensive side. He's worked on the scouting side. He's done all of those kinds of things. So by the time you get to a point where you're a decision maker in the organization, I mean, you have all the background you need to be that decision maker. You don't have to go in there and say, you know what, I mean, as an offensive guy, I would do this, but I don't know. As a scout, maybe I wouldn't, because you've been a scout. You've been a scout on college scout. You've been a pro scout. You've done all of those kinds of things. So from that standpoint, I agree with you. I mean, I really, really like the idea of somebody coming up through this. And the other thing is, over the way the NFL is,
if you're
over
any good,
the years,
they're going to hire your guys.
And if they have been there a while, at some point in time, because of the rocky road this thing has been since Munch, at some point in time, you can't keep the job. You know, at some point in time, you're out of there for whatever reason. And he has been able to keep his job or keep a job all the way through. So somebody, whoever they are, whoever, when they come in, they obviously, you know, spend time with him and think, okay, this guy's pretty cool. Let's keep going.
Well, and Delaney Walker said, when I hosted that Pepsi Q&A with him, Delaney Walker said to the crowd, you know, I asked him the question about what it was like when they switched coaches or whatever. And Delaney Walker was talking about switching coaches or whatever, but said, I was glad that they kept Art as my coach. You know, I didn't, but it was more kind of like he didn't really want to deal with a new coach. It was more of, I'm glad the guy I was working with stayed. But he did make a point to talk about how important it was that the guy who was his coach stayed as coach, and that was a big deal to him. This is Brian Flores's career. New England Patriots, 2004, scouting assistant. 2006, 2007, pro scout. 2008, 2009, so this would be when you got there, special teams assistant. I don't even know what is that, like he assists the special teams coach?
Right.
2010, assistant offense and special teams. So you're just a guy at that point. Like you're not even given a title of coach. You're just assistant offense, assistant special teams. 2011, defensive assistant. So now he's worked on both sides of the ball, defense, offense, and he scouted. 2012 safe to 2015, safeties coach. 2016 to now, linebackers coach. Has not been defensive coordinator, but he is the defensive play caller, and he's now the head coach of the Dolphins. That's kind of the same way that Arthur Smith has come up. And so I feel like that's what Vrabel is trying to do, is what Belichick does constantly. And if it works, more power to them.
Well, we have, when I was GM, we made really two hires like this. That is, guys that were not, you know, household name, that were kind of, you know, are you sure? Do we want to do this? Let's think about it. Let's see.
Can I guess them?
Sure.
Jim Schwartz.
Was one.
And Greg Williams.
There you go. So two guys that you bring up that are kind of the same way as Arthur. Kind of, you know, everybody loved him. Everybody wanted him around. Everybody, and yet there wasn't that household name. You know, nobody really knew who it was. And boom, we hire them both. And you know, a few years later, they're both head coaches. So,
well, I remember Schwartz, too. That first year for Schwartz, people forget. That was a really rocky road. The team finished 7-9 the first year with Schwartz as defensive coordinator. The next year they started off 1-4, and I thought Schwartz was about to get fired because everyone was saying, wait a minute, they had the best defense in the league, and then Greg Williams goes to Buffalo, and now they're terrible. And it took him a while, but then Schwartz, a couple years later, best defensive coordinator in the league. And I didn't know anything about Jim Schwartz before he became defensive coordinator. And the one thing I use, because a lot of people were saying, well, why not an offensive coordinator with experience like Morningwig, who I guess is out there? I don't really know what Morningwig does. I know he likes gimmick plays, but I don't really know what he does. And so whatever he does, is that what would fit the Titans? I don't know. But I know that Arthur Smith knows what Mariota does, and so he can call the plays or put Mariota in position to do the things he wants to do. The other side of that, too, is, I mean, Norm Chow, of all the Titans coordinators, and there have been some bad ones. Chuck Cecil was terrible. Jason Michael and Wisenhunt was a disaster. I mean, they've had a lot of bad ones. But Norm Chow was like, USC was scoring 45 points a game, had back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners. They had Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush win the Heisman Trophy. They were scoring all kinds of points, could not stop that offense, whether it was Carson Palmer or Matt Leinart. Matt Castle goes into the NFL as a quarterback. And so Norm Chow gets hired to be offensive coordinator of the Titans, and you're thinking, God, this is going to be great. You know, Norm's going to light up the scoreboard. And they were dreadful. They were unwatchable. They were so predictable. I mean, my dad, who doesn't even really get that mad, hated Norm Chow so much. Oh, man, he might have not liked him. He might have hated him more than I hated him. And so there could have been nobody that was more heralded to come in as offensive coordinator than Norm Chow, and he might have been the worst. So what that tells me is the pre-hype about any of these guys, it doesn't really matter.
All that matters is what they put on the field.
Well, it's like people that get mad about retread coaches, right?
So
people are like, we don't want retread coaches. You know the hockey coach here in town? He this is his fourth team. We think he's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So this is his fourth team. So if you don't want retread coaches, then you would say, get that Laviolette bum out of here. Laviolette, he can't coach. But we know that Laviolette can coach. And that's why I don't rule anything out. Arthur Smith may be the next guru of football, and you hire him to be offensive coordinator. I mean, I kind of doubt it. But who knows? But it's like, I don't know any of this stuff. I mean, I just, whatever.
Well, I think the bottom line is, like I said, I mean, we'll know next year. But if you... You know, and this is always one of my favorite sayings, you know, if you make a list of things that you like about him, I mean, Arthur checks a bunch of the boxes. I mean, he's somebody that, you know, familiarity is big. And everybody, I mean, I don't care who you talk to over there. I mean, everybody thinks the guy is a really good coach. Everybody. And so that's got to be a positive because, again, if you're at some place for through four head coaches or five head coaches or however many it's been, I mean, you've ticked somebody off along the way now. I mean, there's somebody that, you know, doesn't like you because of what you've done to them or said to them or said about them or whatever the case may be. And yet we, you know, you can't find that guy over there. So.
Let's take more phones. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. There's something great going on here, and yet I question how much people actually care. We'll get to that coming up next. Jared and Floyd, Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 1025 The Game and streaming on the Game National app. So I'm trying to convince Floyd to run the Predators Fantastic 5K, and I guess Floyd doesn't want to run the Fantastic 5K.
That would be correct.
What if I run it? If I run it, will you run it?
No way.
Why not?
Because
why?
No. I go for it, though.
I want to see you in your short shorts with your Preds Fantastic 5K little bib on. Yeah. Running out. I want to see that. Ian, don't you want to see Floyd support the Pediatric Cancer 365 Fund at Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital by running the 5K?
Yes, I do, minus the short shorts.
I got to be honest. Like, I don't think Floyd wears the short shorts anymore. That's just me. But, so there's one thing going on in this town. I say this town because I think we consider the Vols to be a local team. The Vols are the number one team in the country in college basketball. And yet I just don't feel the passion in the town about Vol basketball that I think would be tangible if it were Vol football. And the reason I say this is I think Tennessee fans are excited, and I think they like, you know, the fact that they're number one and they love Rick Barnes. And how can you not love this basketball team that Tennessee has out there with the players on it? But,
oh, yeah.
But the games aren't really all that exciting. Although Saturday's game against Alabama, unfortunately, was exciting. The games aren't that exciting. And also, I just don't know if college basketball matters to the people in this city like it used to. You know, I am really struggling. Two years ago, we talked a lot of college basketball on the show. And that was fine. And we talked a lot of college basketball, a lot of Titans offseason, and a lot of Preds. Last year, and I get all the research, it was basically telling us, don't talk college basketball, talk Predators. So we would talk Predators. We would talk, hey, you know, what did you think about this Thursday night game at Florida, and what did we make of the way that so-and-so played and all that? And Jared and the GM exploded. And I feel like even more passion is now sewn into the Predators and kind of away from college basketball. And then I think the third factor that goes into this is 20 years ago, the Vols were the number one team or number two team in Nashville. Now they're like the fourth or fifth team. And all the people that move into town already have a college team, and it ain't the Vols. So a lot of Alabama fans live here. A lot of LSU fans live here. A lot of Georgia fans live here, so a lot of these people move in here, and they already have a team that they root for, so they don't care that the Vols are number one in basketball. Is it crazy that I look at this Vol basketball team, an incredibly likable team with a good coach, number one in the country? I think they could beat Duke right now, and yet I just feel like the city's not dialed up for it like they would be. They would have been 10 years ago for a number one Vols team.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, basketball pales in comparison to football. And so, you know, it is not as popular as football. We know that, except for one place, and that's Kentucky. And there are a lot of Kentucky fans here. And so I think that keeps a bunch of the Tennessee fans at large. Now, it'll be interesting to see with the Vols coming to town as the number one team in the country, you know, what it looks like, for example, at the gym tomorrow night.
Oh, it'll be all orange.
But, I mean, if I would assume that, you know, if you were to go through right now and rank the basketball supporters in this town, that Kentucky would be first and followed by, I don't know, UT, Vols, whatever. I mean, UT or Vandy or, you know, whoever would be next. But, I mean, it's just as an observation, I mean, we got a lot of Kentucky basketball fans.
11 years ago was when Tennessee beat Memphis on a Saturday night. They got the number one ranking, and they came into Memorial Gym and they lost. I think it was on Big Monday, or maybe it was Monday or Tuesday. And I was at that game. And I remember the buzz in the building, the buzz in the city. I mean, it was just, that was all anybody could talk about. That was all anybody cared about. That game was a great game. They had great teams. You know, you had Bruce Pearl sweating through his orange jacket, you know, all those things. And I'm not here to say that we can't have that tomorrow night when Vandy plays the Vols, because maybe Vandy pulls it out. I don't know. They won't. But maybe they do. And maybe it's an entertaining game and all of that, but I think a lot of that has to do with Vandy being so bad. You know, that the buzz isn't as palpable for this game because Vandy's so bad, and we all think the Vols are going to win by 20. But yet, I mean, this Vols team, this should be the talk of the town. It would have been the talk of the town 10 years ago, and it's not. In Knoxville, they're the talk of the town, without a doubt.
Oh, there's no doubt.
They love this team in Knoxville.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like here the Vols fans are happy for the Vols. But even here, like, I don't think Vols fans in Nashville are banging down the door saying, why isn't there more coverage on how great the Vols are? When, as in the past, there was banging on the door about why is there not more coverage for Vol football? Why is there not more coverage for the Preds? Why is there not more for that? And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I think ultimately, too, and I don't know what the national ratings say, but I think college basketball across the country is less popular. And I don't know if it's the cheating or if it's the one and done or if it's the fact that you turn on a Duke game and you don't even know who these kids are. You're like, who's Cam Reddish? So then once you find out who Cam Reddish is, Cam Reddish is in the NBA, and now Duke's got a whole new team. Kentucky's the same way. Kentucky's eighth in the country. How many players on Kentucky's team do you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know any of them. And I think that's part of the problem with all these basketball teams. You know, you have the kid at Vandy that gets hurt this year, supposed to be a great player.
Season over.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he probably comes out next year in spite of it. So, you know, here he went to Vandy for a year. We don't ever even see him take a shot.
I told you I was thinking about buying Vandy season tickets. It was Black Friday. We were at Chewy's. And I was thinking about buying Vandy season tickets. And I was like, you know, this Black Friday, they were like $300 or something, you know, like I'd buy two season tickets and go, you know, to Kentucky and Tennessee. And then, you know, if there's a Saturday game and I got nothing else going on, I'll go to the game. You know, it's kind of easy to park there. And then like that day he hurt his knee. Nope. See ya. Out. Goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
And I obviously, when you look at Vandy's results, I'm glad I made that choice. Like I was talking to somebody today back in Louisville about attendance. Louisville is, you know, they're not good. They're like 23rd or something in the country. But they got a new coach, and they just beat North Carolina by 20 at Carolina. The worst loss in Roy Williams' tenure at Carolina. And they're saying that they're getting about $15,000 to $16,000 a game in a 22-seat building.
Yeah.
So maybe college basketball just isn't as popular anymore as it used to be around the country.
Well,
like baseball.
And with the Vols, I mean, the basketball program has been down a little bit. I mean, it's coming back in the last couple of years. But, I mean, there for a while, it was not very good. Kind of, you know, like Vandy is right now. I mean, just college basketball in this town, I mean, there's not a lot of enthusiasm because, you know, I think we're waiting. We're hoping the Vols are going to be for real and hoping that, you know, they can carry you through to deep into the playoffs.
Tournament.
And if they can, or tournament, if they can, that's, you know, that would be fantastic. I think you'd see a totally different atmosphere.
Oh, I think in March they'll matter.
Yeah.
In this town, they will matter in March. I just don't think they matter now. And that's kind of the rub that I look at when I see this team is I just don't feel it. Maybe it's just us. Maybe we're the ones without a clue, but I don't feel the same kind of buzz. I do feel a lot of buzz around the Predators. And I go back to Friday's show. We did 3 hours on the loss to Winnipeg and had loaded phones the entire show. That is something that when we started this show, you know, 3 years ago, we started doing Jared and the GM. Did you ever think that in January we were going to do 3 hours on a regular season Preds game and have loaded phone lines the whole time?
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't.
Now, our phone lines are usually pretty buzzing anyways, but like Friday, that was crazy. And so I feel the buzz surrounding them. And last night, I felt a different kind of buzz after their win against Colorado, and I want to get into that because I am torn on how to feel about what I saw last night out of the Predators. We'll get into that coming up next. Jared and the GM right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.